The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 588, recorded on September 21st, 2020.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 421st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, so, you know, slow gaming news day. Just kind of boring. We're gonna have to scrounge up news this week.
That was sarcasm, right?
Yeah. So before we move on to that, what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been trucking along through Wasteland 3. Finally had a chance to sit down and just mess around with it for a good few hours this last weekend.
What was the game you were playing last week again?
Which one? One of the indies?
Yeah, I think it was an indie game that you were talking about.
Let me look through my list, because there's so many of them.
That was exciting radio.
Sorry,
Scott, what have you been playing while he's looking it up?
I've been playing more of the Cold Steel, getting through that game. I've been playing a little Animal Crossing, a little bit of Minecraft, just, you know, a little bit of everything. Nothing particularly new, but, just been playing the old standbys.
Yeah, I mean, same with me, actually. I actually opened up Minecraft today, but I had something to do, so at some point I'll start playing Minecraft for realsies.
That'll be awesome. Yeah, you can go explore the Nether, try to build a base there, and see all the different biomes that they have now. It's very good.
Yeah, but what I have been playing is, I know I finished... Oh, yeah, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah, I think I saw you tweet about it or something.
It is the worst fucking RPG ever made.
Yes.
I add in every grindy JRPG there ever has been, and Too Human.
Man.
And I know, I think I said this last week, and TJ piped in with a defense of Too Human.
Yeah, I mean, like, I defended the co-op element, but then again, every game is better when you get to play it with someone else. I think the one that we were talking about last weekend was Crown Trick.
Yes, that was the game you were talking about, yes. Did you finish it, or just play enough of it to review?
It was a demo, so PAX Online was last week, yeah. So they had a ton of demos that were on Steam, and so I checked out quite a few of them. Crown Trick was easily probably one of the most interesting of the group, which it's kind of like Crypt of the Necrodancer, except you don't have to do it to like a beat. But like every move is like a move for you make a move, everybody else makes a move at the same time. So
I found out something really exciting though.
What's that?
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 is on Game Pass.
Ah, you should. Did you play it back in the day?
I told you, I played Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X, which was the Xbox launch game, which basically is what Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 really is. It had 1, it had 2, and it had some preview levels from 3.
It's really good. I finished it recently.
Yeah.
And they did a bang-up job on Skate Heaven.
And then you have Marvel's Avengers, which is basically a live service game.
Yes.
It is embarrassingly a live service game. One of the missions literally has you visiting all the vendors.
It is. You can tell how much they love Destiny 2 because it is hand and foot. The inventory system in that game is absolutely Destiny 2.
Which right means it's down terrible.
We're right down to the whole, like, you get a piece of gear that's slightly better than the last piece of gear you had.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this a game that was beta, like, a few weeks ago?
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of games that were beta, but...
It was beta through all of August. So, it's not Okay, so like the single, it's almost like it's two different games in one game. The single player part isn't bad. It's like straight up, they made a Marvel movie, but it's a video game. And it's actually like a pretty serviceable story.
Except it has the B team playing all the characters, and it's very distracting.
They do a pretty good job with Kamala Khan.
Khan wasn't in any of the movies, was she?
Right, but they make a story
there
around
go. I mean, and how can you watch Iron Man and not think, oh god, this guy's so much worse than Robert Downey Jr.?
I don't know. Oh
my god, that's not Chris Hemsworth.
The production value they put into it is good enough that like it didn't distract me that much.
I wouldn't need them to look like the actors to enjoy the game. It just needs to be good.
Yeah, but they're bad actors, which makes it worse.
They're not though. Like the single player story is actually really good in that game.
If you say so.
I do say so. It's
you want to talk about something that's been universally praised?
Well, I was going to say, the suck part is the multiplayer, which is straight up like, go do missions over and over and over again, get gear that's slightly better than what you had before, and just keep grinding for the rest of your life.
So let's talk about something that everybody's universally praised, including me, and that's the short film that's sort of a prequel to Star Wars Squadrons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that was one that was about the
Baltar Gray, the Imperial fighter, who's chased by Inspector Javert down to a planet. And everybody asks the same questions. Why are all these cutscenes that we've seen from Star Wars The Old Republic on down so much better than the movies? Better written, better characterized.
I think it's just that they have a really good writing team at EA on the narratives for those games.
I think it's because not everybody's related to everybody. We're not going to find out that Valkar Gray is secretly Emperor Palpatine's grandson or something.
Yeah, they're not recycling storylines.
Actually, you know what shocked me? That he's not he's not related to Boba Fett or Jango Fett. Because he looks a lot like Jango Fett. Except with a man bun. But it's just that they're not beholden to, you have to have this, this, and this, and this. No, no, it's just a World War II fighter story. You know? They're losing. He tries to, escape. That's the story for that little short film.
Yeah. Which I like that they're doing something different. That's kind of like what TIE Fighter and X-Wing did. Yeah. Which, this does feel like a spiritual successor to TIE Fighter and X-Wing versus X-Wing in so many ways.
Yeah, and people have been playing it, people have been playing it for the past month. And it's not quite what they expected, which I think means it's they never played TIE Fighter versus X-Wing.
Yeah, like, I really like the aspect that you actually, like, change power between the thrusters, the lasers, and the shield. That's a really interesting aspect, and I really do feel like it's going to make like the difference between someone who just jumps into the game for the first time versus someone who's played for a while.
And it's only $40, which tells me there's going to be DLC, but you know, for a game like this, I don't mind. Get some more missions, get some more ships, you know.
Yeah, fine. For sure.
It looks promising. Hope it I did not play Mafia Definitive Edition, though. Did either of you?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Are you looking forward to Yakuza Like a Dragon there, TJ?
Yeah, that game looks fun. Yep.
By the way, I was able to download, pre-download, both Gears Tactics, which I already own, and I found out, here's the thing I realized, since it's Xbox Enhanced, I already have achievements for it, because I played the PC version. And I also, I think I already mentioned this before, I already pre-downloaded Final Fantasy, I mean not Final Fantasy, I mean Dragon's Quest XI. So that's ready awesome. When I want to play it. But that's not going to be until November.
Hmm.
You have to tell us how you like it.
Well, I like the demo at E3. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'll like it. It's not, I haven't done much of the combat, but it doesn't seem... Here's the thing. Dragon's Quest games have never felt grindy to me, even if they were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last one I played was 9 on the DS. So, I'm looking forward to it. It sort of has that Yonder feel, actually, now that I think about it.
Have you played the other Dragon's Quest besides 9?
No.
Okay, because this one is a little bit less punny than... it's a little bit more serious, I think, or takes itself...
11? Not from the videos I've seen. Everybody yeah, in this does. Town speaks in rhyme.
It's still more serious than 9. I felt like 9 was just too over the top with the puns and all that stuff. The rhymes are fine. That's part of its charm. But like 9 just was like, oh, welcome to Phlegm, where we all have a cold and we all, you know, just it was too much.
That's the worst theme 10 I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it was literally that, and none of the places in Dragon's Quest XI were that bad, so I felt like it took itself more serious than 9 did.
I might be getting the Ni No Kuni remastered on Xbox.
Awesome. That was a fun game, too. Very Pokemon.
I don't know if it's out yet, but I know it's coming.
Okay.
So, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and now I'm completely forgetting. So how far did you get in Wasteland 3?
I have gotten past the Little Vegas nightclub, and...
you say that's where you left off last time?
Yeah, but there's quite a few things to it. Like,
oh, okay.
It's a full quest line.
It's a mission hub, got it.
Yeah.
Now, you said you were playing with your wife watching?
Yes, which at this point we've kind of cleared up our business that we can currently do. Oh, I remember. There's like basically a mission where some crazy-ass dude comes in and tells you he's been hunting synths in Colorado Springs, and they kicked him and his group out of town, and he wants you to go kill it for him. And... he treats you like a dick the moment you show up. And so I went and tracked the synth down, told it what was going on, and let it go. Because
so
I won't be told...
you did a Fallout 3. Got it.
because I won't be told what to do by some asshole.
Yeah. Sounds like what I did in Fallout 3. So anyways... there was something... Oh, yeah. So before we get into the news... you want to tell us about your adventures with PlayStation 5 pre-ordering there, TJ?
Oh, yeah. Like, that was a... So for those who don't know, PlayStation 5... or Sony sort of fudged up real hard when they started the pre-order process. On the day of the PlayStation 5 showcase, they told everybody, hey, pre-orders are going to open on September 17th, which, by the way, it was on, like, the showcase was on September 16th. Yeah. And then immediately after the words, pre-orders opened up at Walmart, and then at Target, and then at Best Buy, and then at, and then everywhere. And, like, I didn't get in by the time that I noticed it was going on because I thought I had until the morning.
Aren't you glad you won that raffle?
But I was I was a smart boy, and I put my name in the silly-ass PlayStation 5 raffle in which they will let you earn the chance to pre-order.
I'm kind of surprised you were going to do that because I thought you thought that was silly.
Well, he's not so silly now, is he?
I guess not.
I did think it was stupid, but then I also put my name – I put my PlayStation Network ID in just in case.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, I ended up getting – I ended up being one of the people that got an email, which apparently not everybody did. Because a bunch of my colleagues were like, what the fuck? How did you make that happen?
Emails from Amazon.
And so apparently I'm the boy with the golden ticket. And I ran home, dodged all the queues, and cashed it in.
So, yeah, people were getting a lot of emails from Amazon. Those were just peppering all over the place on Twitter.
Yeah, a few of my friends ordered from Amazon, and now they're getting emails that say, we
don't
may
know if
have
we're
oversold
have it for you, but you'll get it as soon as possible.
This email is to tell you that even though you placed the order, you might not actually get the PS4 or PS5.
At least not in timely fashion like everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, actually, you know what? I think we never got to talk about that. Last week, the PlayStation thing was announcement was right after the podcast, and the prices were announced, and they're basically, $499, $500 for the regular PlayStation 5, and $400 for a PlayStation 5 without a disc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they should call it.
So I'm guessing you'll be getting the $400 machine.
I went ahead and got the $500 one because I remembered that I have games like Bloodborne, and I'm from like way early when I bought the PS4, and I'm almost certain that if anything will get like optimized for PS5, it'll be Bloodborne. Yeah. And I kind of want to see what that'll look like.
Meanwhile, Microsoft announced its pre-orders, and it was very strict. It'll be tomorrow on the East Coast. It'll be at 11 o'clock a.m. And Jeff Keighley also said Microsoft was warning, hey, you break this embargo, we will make you hurt.
Yeah, because a lot of people were thinking that Walmart jumped the gun early. And so when Walmart jumped the gun early, everybody else did.
So, yeah, they said, you know, if you break the embargo, you're not going to get many of the machines. Now, it'll be interesting to see. Now, here's a lot of people are looking at Sony and saying, really, you're taking this out of Nintendo's playbook? Because everybody thinks, yeah, false, what's it called, shortage.
Oh, that, yeah, that they didn't have a million units.
Yeah, I cannot believe that. And it may backfire on them, because what if they have the shortage when Microsoft says, hey, guess what, anybody wants an Xbox Series X or S? You can have one. I mean, Nintendo gets away with it.
I don't know what I believe on that, because there have been several stories throughout the year about PlayStation coming up against issues of manufacturing due to COVID-19.
Microsoft had the same ones, so we'll see. It's not like they're the only ones.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but yeah, I mean, a lot of things going on. And oh, by the way, it's interesting. Now we're going to get into the news. It's interesting that the pre-orders are tomorrow, the 22nd. If you're listening to this not on today, the day before that, they decide to drop a mic. And the first game news is Microsoft purchases ZeniMax for $7.5 billion. And I had so many news sites I could have picked, because everybody was reporting this, from even mainstream media like Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is you can tell how mainstream they are by how not really in the present they are, because the Wall Street Journal said that Microsoft bought the people who made Doom, which is true, technically true. But instead, I decided to, get the link from TJ's article. So, Microsoft announced a massive pickup for its collection of game studios today. The publishing giant and Xbox company is picking up ZeniMax Media in a newly announced deal. Consequently, the new deal brings Bethesda and everything that comes with it, including Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Doom, Wolfenstein, and other major gaming franchises into Microsoft's already massive stable. The news was announced by Microsoft itself on Twitter in a press release on today, the 21st of 2020. According to sources familiar with the deal, Microsoft will pay around $7.5 billion for the acquisition. It's about three times more what Microsoft paid to acquire Mojang back in 2014 for $2.5 billion, but also gives Microsoft access to everything involved with ZeniMax, including Bethesda Game Studios, which was the Elder Scrolls and Fallout, Arcane Studios, Dishonored and Deathloop, id Software, Doom, Machine Games, Wolfenstein, Tango Gameworks, The Evil Within, Ghostwire Tokyo, and more. So here's the thing. When they found that out, a lot of Sony owners panicked, because two of the games that were going to be Sony exclusives are Ghostwire Tokyo and Deathloop.
Mm-hmm.
But Microsoft said that all the deals that were pre-existing are going to still go through, which means PS5 PC release. But what it does mean is that you can bet your sweet ass that it's going to be Xbox Game Pass for PC day one, launch. The other thing is that the minute they said that, they said, oh, wait, Obsidian is owned by Microsoft, and Bethesda is owned by Microsoft. Fallout New Vegas 2.
And yeah, that would be...
Give Avowed a chance, damn it. I think they're busy with Avowed right now.
Yeah, like, and that's got to be a tough position to be put in for Obsidian, because I don't know if you saw, but they just responded with, like, a shrug emoji.
You should have seen how John Romero reacted.
Please take care of my baby.
Yeah. Microsoft responded, too. Xbox, they said, yes, we'll give them – what did they say again? We'll give them treats and candy and all that stuff and John Romero. And then someone had an actual hand-petting Doom guy.
John Carmack was hoping that maybe he could get back together with some of his colleagues now that this has happened.
Yeah. So let's now – here's the other thing. Let's talk about exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things that Bethesda said was that it would be releasing games for PC and Xbox and other consoles on a case-by-case basis, which tells me is that, no, The Elder Scrolls VI will not be an Xbox exclusive. Fallout will not be an Xbox exclusive. Doom will not be an Xbox exclusive. Fallout will not be an Xbox exclusive.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there's no Xbox has made it blatantly clear over and over again. They do not care about a console war anymore.
Their highest rated game was ported to the PS4, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Microsoft has been very open with putting multiple games on multiple consoles, so there's no real worry.
When they acquired Minecraft, they didn't say, okay, PlayStation, fuck you. Because here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing that's happening right now. They're going to be putting the game on Game Pass, but you know what? They're going to be making money from the game being sold full price on the PlayStation.
Yes. Like, they're basically saying, you mean we could make money off of PlayStation players as well as our own players? Well, sure. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. You know what the platform Microsoft loves the most right now? Game Pass. Their biggest competitor? Stadia. That's who they're worried about.
Yes. If Stadia ever gets good, which... I mean,
Google has... $40 billion of revenue last I saw, and it was 3 years ago.
We all treat it like – yeah, and the funny thing is that like most of us treat it like it's the biggest joke in gaming because it started out that way. But they have the capital to make it work, and before we know it, like put enough money into something, let the technology continue to grow, and it'll matter someday.
You know what this is, right? This is Microsoft waving Game Pass in front of Sony's face and saying – do you mind if we put this on the PlayStation 2?
I actually wouldn't mind that in the least.
No.
And part of this news, I also saw people requesting Sony to buy Konami.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I doubt that'll happen.
There's several reasons why. Number one, Sony isn't as rich as Microsoft. Because here's the thing about Microsoft. They have other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They have other
successful
businesses that are making
businesses.
Money for them. Let's, for the one thing, Microsoft has Windows, and businesses always buy Windows overpriced. It's like getting a golden toilet. They just want Windows on there, boom, it comes on every, installed on almost every PC. No one's running out and say, I want a Linux machine, damn it. Or a Mac OS, damn it.
Yeah. And like then there's also cloud computing, which they pretty much are pushing that harder than
Sony is buying their space on xCloud too.
Yeah.
I mean, Sony, here's the thing. Sony and Nintendo, they're still stuck on hardware.
Yes.
Microsoft has always, always, always been about the software. Even from the very start. That's why they were so hyped up on getting an ecosystem for Xbox Live first. I mean, Xbox Live on the original Xbox, kind of primitive. When the Xbox 360 came around, that's when they said, you know what, we're going to have chat, we're going to have our own, mic, you know, voice chat, text chat, game lobbies, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They pushed that hard with Xbox Live because they knew, you know. They treated the Xbox like a PC.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, the Xbox Series X basically is a, I would say, mid-tier PC.
That's pretty good. I mean, oh, by the way, that's the other thing I was playing. I was finally getting into xCloud. I did mostly Slay the Spire because that's the best thing to play while in bed. I mean, yeah, I could have played Halo, but Slay the Spire is best when you're just chilling back on your pillow, playing a game. Playing it like it's a like a Nintendo Switch. Speaking of which, we still haven't heard anything from Nintendo about the next Switch console.
I doubt we'll hear anything on it until 2021.
I think there is something in the works. I mean, something that actually has a hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's generally accepted at this point. Like, it's still a rumor, but like it's like almost also the worst kept secret.
But I'm wondering if Microsoft isn't sidling up to Nintendo and saying, you know, there's another way you can get around that hard drive problem.
Mm-hmm.
You could always, stream your games through the Switch using the xCloud.
Yeah. The big thing that people have been talking about is longer battery life and moving this thing from, right now it's 1080p, they want to move it up to 4K.
I don't think people really care. Here's the thing. There was a lot of talk about the Xbox Series S, you know, and its capabilities. And my thinking is, no, this is a $300 machine. The people who are going to be buying this are not going to have 4K TVs. They're going to be perfectly satisfied with 1080p, if that's with their TVs. They're not looking for cutting edge. They want something that's going to play the latest stuff. And so long as it plays the same stuff as the Xbox Series X, you know, they're satisfied with it. It's not like it's going to get left behind. The games may be, dumbed down a bit, but look at the Wii and look at the Switch. You know, they never had to be cutting edge to have people play the games on it.
Yeah, I mean. That's one of the things you can say about the Nintendo Switch is that, like, nobody is doing what Nintendo does because Nintendo specifically goes out of their way to not do what everybody else is doing.
Well, until you get the controller to put around your cell phone, then it looks like you're holding a Switch controller.
Yeah,
the screen.
You're right that Nintendo is about hardware, and they're also about, I guess, unique hardware. Some people would say gimmicky. But they want to do.
Nintendo is about the games.
Want to include prefer.
Yeah, but when they do hardware experimentation, it's basically being a toy.
Yeah,
I mean that's apropos because we've said it before on this show. Nintendo is a toy company more than they're a game company.
Yes. I mean, the Labo didn't clue you in on that.
But like. Look at the Mario 35th anniversary. One of the most interesting things to come out of that whole event was a Mario Kart toy that uses AR and links up to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. There's a bit of a controversy with that game that they released that says it's only going to be available until March 2021.
Yeah,
and I sent a video that showing that that's a very dangerous precedent and people are hoping that it doesn't catch on.
I don't like that either, especially on digital. I mean, it's one thing if you're just producing so many cartridges, but then digital is limited as well. And that's the toy maker attitude that I know
that's
been
Disney attitude.
Yeah, it is.
This copy of Pinocchio is only going to be out for a limited time. It's going to be gone. Oh, it's gone. 5 years later, oh, we have a special edition of Pinocchio. Well, now we have a special ultra max version of Pinocchio with more content. Disney releasing the same shit six times, but Nintendo's done that with the original Legend of Zelda. How many times do people have to pay for that thing?
I don't know.
Because they consider every instance of the game to be a different one. Yeah. I looked that up, and it's ridiculous.
they don't even try to improve. It's just a straight-up port.
Nintendo Japan makes some of the most confounding decisions of any group I've ever seen.
You weren't around for Sega Japan.
Here's Final Fantasy 1. Here's Final Fantasy, quote-unquote, 2, but it's actually 4. Here's Final Fantasy... We're going to do 5 now. Let's not do 5. Let's go to 6, but we're going to call it 3. It's just like, why?
What about Super Mario Brothers: The Lost Levels?
Yeah.
You like the virtual console that we put on the Wii U and the DS, do you? Well, how about, instead of that, we give you 3 games every 2 months?
If we feel like it.
Meanwhile, Microsoft and Sony are going, yeah, we have all these games, just take them. Just play them for now.
Like, I like being able to turn on the Nintendo Switch and play the NES or SNES online libraries, but man, is it a slow trickle.
It is, and then they put on titles that it's like, nobody wanted this game. What's this game? I never, nobody wanted it.
They just added Mario Picross, which I guess is super popular in Japan, but also, like, I don't know. It took them 3 years from doing the NES Switch Online to finally put Donkey Kong Country on there.
Did they at all release Earthbound 3? Or Mother 3, Earthbound?
Earthbound is on there, I think.
Like, it took them forever for them to release that thing. Even though the main character from that game was in Super Smash all the time. But people said, who the hell is this character?
I'd have to go back and check. I'm not...
I don't know. I just want Microsoft to buy Platinum Games so that they can take back Bayonetta from Nintendo.
No, because if today was any indication, they would still let Nintendo have their exclusivity to it.
No, but it'll... You see everything. But it'll be on Game Pass. And then they'd put Bayonetta 2 on Game Pass. And they put Bayonetta 3 on Game Pass for PC.
Earthbound is not on SNES Online. That's a bummer.
Yep. Like I said, it's one of those games that the fans always ask for. Please send us Earthbound. Please send us Earthbound. No, it's too popular.
Here's Panel Dupon instead.
In a tennis game. Nobody asked for it, but here it is.
Hey, I would love to see a good new tennis game. There's been a drought of those. The last one I played was awful.
There's a Mario Tennis game. I thought it was pretty good.
No, not Mario Tennis, just a licensed tennis game. They do have they just released PGA Tour 2K21, and from what I hear, it's okay. But I'll sell for okay at this point.
Yeah. I think... I don't know. I think Virtua Tennis is the last one I remember being like a dedicated tennis game that used real people.
I don't know, but this purchase of ZeniMax just makes me think, you know what? Let's have a Psychonauts / Commander Keen crossover.
What do you want to see? What do you want to see Microsoft do with ZeniMax?
You know what? A lot of people were talking. And firstly, they said we'll have Obsidian do a new Fallout. No. But they did, or they said it'd do the next Halo, and God, no. But I heard someone say, how about Arkane Studios doing the new Perfect Dark?
Arkane Studios would be extremely good at that, but I want them to continue on Deathloop.
Well, that's almost done, though. I mean, I could not figure out what the fuck was going on with Ghostwire Tokyo.
It's a mystery game with ghosts.
In Tokyo.
It looked like Watch Dogs Tokyo.
I don't think it's supposed to be Watch Dogs. I think it's, like TJ said, a mystery...
It's cyber. Super... It's all cyber.
It is. It's got a little bit of a cyberpunk aspect going on.
No, but you know, have a small team at Arcane Studios do Perfect Dark.
I think at this point, Microsoft is probably just going to have them do what their current projects are, which is Starfield.
But they're going to have something after that. And I have to wonder, right. You know, it seems to me Microsoft is going to these people and saying, okay, what do you want to make?
Right.
What in your wildest dreams do you want to make? Because I find it hard to believe Microsoft ordered Obsidian to make an Elder Scrolls-style game of Pillars of Eternity. That does not sound like something Microsoft would request. It
Ferguson,
sounds more like something Microsoft asked them, what do you want to do?
Josh,
and Obsidian said, we want to make this Elder Scrolls-type game based on the Pillars of Eternity. Done.
Josh Sawyer said that Ferguson had been wanting to make that Avowed since before Pillars 2 was being developed. So that's been something in the works for a long time. And, yeah, Microsoft money made that possible.
It doesn't seem like something Microsoft asked them to do.
Right.
It sounds like something Microsoft asked them, what do you want to do?
And this is it. The Avowed was it.
Which makes me wonder what InXile is going to do next.
I'll tell you what. And this is my hot take. 343 Studios isn't very good at their jobs. have machine games guide them on single player in Halo Infinite. Have id Software guide them on multiplayer.
And I just asked, you know, it makes me wonder what InXile is going to do next, because Wasteland 3 was a big hit. It is a big hit. I mean, people, I don't know how the sales are. I mean, it's hard to tell with Game Pass. But it's getting rave reviews, and I'm wondering what Brian Fargo's asking Microsoft. We want to do this next. And, you know, Microsoft's going to say, okay, go right ahead. I keep on thinking about Gears Tactics. And when interviewed about it, the developer said, you know, this is a game that we would have never been able to make had it gone with a traditional pricing, you know, schedule. You know, we have to get this amount of sales to get it. Game Pass allows us freedom to experiment and make Gears meets XCOM without having to worry about sales figures. And I think all Microsoft wants is content and variety of content.
That's true.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Do you remember all the rumors when Microsoft purchases Nintendo?
Yeah, I think I've heard about that.
You've had that rumor. This is when you first heard it. Didn't it strike you as one of those kind of rumors? Like a
at
bullshit
first,
rumor.
I mean, somebody posted it on my Discord, and I went and looked at it, and I immediately saw comments from Pete Hines and Todd Howard, and
then you know it's real.
Yeah, Phil Spencer, all three of them, and I was like, oh wow. And it was just like you were saying, they are getting more resources now to do opportunities to make their games better.
Which is a good segue to the next item. Go ahead,
yeah.
Scott.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Bethesda overhauling its engine for Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6. This is from Games Radar. Starfield, Bethesda's cinematic upcoming game is set to feature a significantly more advanced game engine than the likes of Fallout 76 or Skyrim. Good news for anyone wondering whether the Elder Scrolls 6 engine will see an update. Writing earlier today in the aftermath of Bethesda's blockbuster acquisition of Microsoft, Bethesda's Todd Howard spoke about the effect of partnering with Microsoft with the Xbox Series X on the horizon, saying that it's led to our largest engine overhaul since Oblivion, with all new technologies powering our first new IP in 25 years, Starfield, as well as The Elder Scrolls 6. Little is known about Starfield, aside from it being Bethesda's first new IP in roughly 25 years and being an RPG set in space. Publications have had no additional information about the game since the debut trailer announced in the project back in E3 2018. And that trailer was just basically a shot of a satellite, I think, in space. And this could be anything from a first-person shooter to 4X to...
They're ripping off Outer Wilds, no!
Or isometric or some space farming whatever game. We don't know.
I can't help but think Microsoft went up to Bethesda and said, dump the fucking Game Rio engine now.
They probably said it a little bit better than that, but yeah. So it was probably
we own you now, and we have a new system.
Listen. We'll give you money. You make this game with our engine, and we'll make millions, billions.
I think they said they're making their own engine, but still, I mean, the Game Rio engine was just—it's far from old. Now it's ancient. I mean, it was used for Fallout 3, for crying out loud.
I mean, did they not have the resources to make a new engine? Because, I mean, this is suddenly starting to make a lot of sense now,
Skyrim didn't make a penny, did it? Now, did it?
It should have made a lot. Sold it on every freaking console possible, even the mobile phone.
It's funny, now Microsoft has both Avowed and The Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah, I know. That was what was so weird. I was like, wow, so these two games aren't going to compete?
Well, I'm pretty sure The Elder Scrolls 6, and you can bank it, is going to be on PlayStation systems. They're not going to say screw Sony. No, they want it as a day one pass on Xbox Game Pass path. They want it as a day one on Game Pass. And you know, if you own a PlayStation and you want to pay $60 or $70 for it, go right ahead. But you know, this little system over here, you know, $15 a month. But yeah, I mean, now I'm interested in seeing what The Elder Scrolls 6 is going to look like, now that it's, you know, using a new engine.
So now I wonder if they had anything before this, or are they just going to... I guess if they're getting a new engine, yeah, they would have to ditch a lot of whatever they had, if they had anything. I just, you know, I don't think they had much.
TJ?
What was the question?
Elder Scrolls 6.
What do you think it'll look like?
I mean, all we have at this point is a title screen.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
They've analyzed it. Yeah, so some fans have analyzed the heck out of that image and tried to guess where it is. Like, some people think it might be Hammerfell.
I would love to do the Daggerfall thing and have all of Tamriel.
I think that would be neat as well. I also would, like, I've already put my opinion out there as to what I would want. I would like the Khajiit homeland.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Elsewhere is a really strange place, and there's a lot of interesting lore there, and they've never explored it.
It's a big swamp, damn it.
That's Blackmoor, which is
I was confusing the Argonians with the Khajiit.
Yeah. Khajiit has wares if you have coin.
Yeah. Everybody's favorite drug dealers.
I love them.
It's true. They're drug dealers.
I love them in their mint sugar.
They're sweet little katas.
Come on, have
not?
Some skooma. You like skooma, do you know?
Elsewhere is just an interesting place, too. Like, I've read up on it, and it sounds like a place I'd like to explore in depth.
But like I said, I would like to see the Daggerfall thing and have all of Tamriel this time. Screw it.
That would also be very good.
Very ambitious.
Either way, I mean, by 2025, they would probably do it.
Either way, either one that lets me explore elsewhere is cool.
So let's speculate on Starfield. What do you want Starfield to be? Because I say what I do not want it to be. I do not want it to be The Outer Worlds.
I feel like, yeah, there's so many first-person games now. I feel like you need to kind of break away from that, especially
I would love to see it be sort of like Star Trek, in which you have your own starship,
mm-hmm.
and you have adventures with the starship being the mission hub, and not everything is fight. I'd like to see diplomatic stuff too, sort of like the dialogue system in Mass Effect.
That does sound interesting. I think it would be good. It could almost be like a classic adventure game, but space.
Also, here's the thing. What about remember that VR Star Trek game in which everybody had their own place on a starship? You imagine Starfield being like Sea of Thieves except in outer space?
Oh, wow. That would be crazy.
TJ,
I think that's kind of what Evo is, isn't it?
Evo is you're in your own little damn spaceship, just like Elite Dangerous and Star Citizen, whatever that's coming out. TJ, what would you like it to be?
Tachyon. Nothing has been quite like Tachyon since Tachyon.
What is Tachyon?
Tachyon was a kind of like Wing Commander, I guess. It was a game in which you play the role of a pilot who basically works between different factions, and the ship that you can get depends on which faction that you align with, and you get upgrades for your ship throughout missions as you build up more cash.
Yeah, this is 20 years ago. You know who the star of that game was?
Bruce Campbell.
Yep.
Nice. Oh, I'd like to see Bruce Campbell in a game again. That'd be nice.
Like Space Gang, there's a part in that game where space gangsters steal the Sistine Chapel roof, and that's just cool. I like that whole game.
Yeah,
I wish there was more things like
that. What happened to them?
Yeah, they kind of went by the wayside.
Let's see, they ended in 2009. Sad. Mm-hmm. Oh, they were working on Super Mario's Wacky Worlds for the Philips CDI. God, they should have completed one last game. We needed another bad CDI game based on Mario characters.
Mm-hmm. Zelda actually, characters.
No, it was canceled. Damn it. But actually, you know, Super Mario's Wacky World actually did look a little like a Super Mario game. It wasn't like the corny Zelda games, but stuff. I still would have liked to have seen a really goofy Nova Logic CDI Mario game.
Yeah, that's just weird to me, because like I feel like I remember Nova Logic being pretty good at what they did. They made the whole Delta Force series.
Yeah, they did Delta Force, they did Joint Operations, they did the Comanche games.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, people still think Comanche 4, I think was their last one, was the best, is still the best Attack Chopper game still on the market.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I mean, it was... Here's the thing. It was realistic for actual military hardware. As a matter of fact, you had actual attack copter pilots reviewing the game and calling it how realistic it was. So, I mean... Hey, but guess what? There's actually a Comanche game coming out this year, apparently.
It's on early access right now. It's got mixed reviews currently.
But it's a massively multiplayer game, so if, you know, it's harder to do when it's not a curated single-player experience.
Yeah. It's a looker, I'll say that much. It doesn't look bad. But looking good and playing good is two very different things.
I wonder if Microsoft's going to ask Bethesda, okay, is there any games that have nothing to do with Fallout, Elder Scrolls that you want to make? And something that's not a first-person RPG.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to see them do something different.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and yeah, TJ, you can take this one.
Alrighty. Former Skullgirls developers have launched a new studio called Future Club from PC Gamer. In August, multiple employees of Skullgirls developer Lab Zero Games resigned from the studio after an internal investigation revealed an alleged pattern of inappropriate behavior from lead designer Mike Zaymont, who had assumed total control of the company. Shortly after that, Zaymont laid off all remaining employees. Today, some of those former members of the studio announced they have launched a new operation called Future Club, a cooperatively structured independent game studio. The studio currently consists of 15 developers, and while projects haven't been announced yet, the studio said that it is currently developing new IPs. The Future Club is also moving proactively to avoid the kind of trouble that eventually brought Lab Zero down. Along with the co-op structure, it's also establishing conflict resolution systems up front that will enable employees to raise and address issues when they come up.
Yeah, we talked about this last month. And I'd like to point out, it isn't the diversity issue that's the problem there. I think they already realized what the problem is that there was no system for people to have be able to issue complaints without fear about coworkers.
Yeah.
Once you're able to do that without worrying about, you know, without being stressed out about it, or additionally stressed out about it, it makes the culture that much better.
Yeah, because what they got out of it is that basically it got to a point where Mike Zamont pretty much assumed total control of the place, and then he told everybody, basically, if you have a problem, shut up or leave.
I'm glad that they've been able to do a Phoenix move here and basically rise from those ashes and start a new company.
Here's the thing. Skullgirls has a big cult following.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans are going to be smart enough to, just follow them to Future Club, because they're going to get more of the same. I don't know if they're going to do a Skullgirls-type game. I mean, this may be a chance for them to say, we're going to try something new. But I wouldn't be surprised if one of the games they do is going to be a anime-esque fighting game.
They have possibly the opportunity, depending on if they want to, because Lab Zero didn't own the IP. It was actually licensed to them by another company, which that company pretty much saw what Zaymont was doing and said, nope.
So in other words, they might actually do Skullgirls.
They have – like, it will depend on where the – like, if the licensing deal works out between the new studio and the original IP holder. But Lab Zero is pretty much only Zaymont now, and it's dead in the water because he's a piece of shit.
Sort of like Brendan McNamara and Team Bondi.
Yep. King nothing.
But here's the thing. I'm pretty sure the developers will want to do the license for less than they normally would, just so that they can get their name out and just so they can say, we're here, basically an advertising thing. I read an article about Sam's Club and their $1.50 hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who currently is running the company said that he breached the topic with the previous owner before he inherited it. You know, we can raise the prices to $1.75. And the previous owner said, let me make this straight. If you do that, I will fucking kill you.
Nice.
They don't care. The $1.50 is more than just food, you know, for $1.50. It is, you know, and they get around it. You know, they used to do Hebrew National. Now they're making their own hot dogs to cut down on prices. Coke's prices went up, so now they serve Pepsi with it. And the reason is that it's more than just $1.50 Frank and soda. It is advertising. And that's basically what they would be doing here, is that, you know, if they do the get the license and give more concessions to the license holder than they normally would for one game, it's sort of like them saying, hey, look, we're here, we're back. Here's Skullgirls, they're back.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a building goodwill kind of thing.
I could see them going either way. It would really depend on if they got back into licensing talks with that original IP holder, but I could also see them wanting to sort of, yeah, take a fresh breath, try something try to put something together to show that they're more than just Skullgirls.
Hey, TJ, you know the answer to this. How's Them's Fightin' Herds doing?
Them's Fightin' Herds is doing fine. It's still getting updates. In fact, I think it just got one recently. Let me see. But yeah, it's still a fighting game that people play, and for good reason. It's got great netcode.
I still think they should the people who own the license to My Little Pony should really let them have the license.
They got screwed on the fact that basically Evo Online was shut down by the fact that the old owner of the old chairman was a creep. Yeah, the recent update was back in September 4th, so not too long ago. They added a training mode update, which allows you to do more stuff that mess with more options, which is always good. So people have more options to play around with and basically get better. They're also still working on basically getting people their crowdfund rewards. So, yeah. Not bad.
We're going to move on to the next item. Hades has sold 1 million copies, and this comes for us from Eurogamer. Hades, the Greek underworld roguelike made by Supergiant Games, has now shifted an impressive 1 million copies. The game first came out in Early Access in December 2018, and during that time managed to sell over 700,000 units. But since the game's full release on PC and Switch last Thursday, that number has increased by over 300,000. Hades is a godlike, roguelike dungeon crawler that combines the best aspects of Supergiant's critically acclaimed titles, including the fast-paced action of Bastion, the rich atmosphere and depth of Transistor, and the story-driven, character-driven storytelling of Pyre. You've been playing this, haven't you, Scott? TJ?
Yes, well, I have played Bastion and Transistor. I have not played Hades, though, but it looks good.
It's on Switch now. You should totally get it.
Yeah, it's sort of like a rock, a Norse metal music version of Bastion.
That sounds awesome.
I love it. It's the Greek underworld. The Supergiant Games comes in with such a uniquely different style every time they do a different game. Like,
yeah, Bastion had basically Luther Vandross talking to you. Yeah. And then he found out that he had to go in that direction.
Yeah. and then you had like the narrative basically talking about the singer in Transistor. It's so every time they do something, it's so vastly different than what they did before. And
Clay.
Yeah. Hades is just dang good, though. I've had a really good time playing it. I'm about to start playing it on Switch because I would love to have that game to where I can. I like it on Steam, but I want to carry that thing around with me. It's a good roguelike.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a tolerance. You have to be sort of like Tim Schafer to really enjoy it. It's the sort of game that Double Fine would have made if they made that kind of game.
It's moody, but it's got a sense of humor.
And yeah, it has the rock music.
Oh my god!
That's the kind of music that a game like this needs. Something a lot more amping, a lot more energizing. Because Bastion's soundtrack, I think, was kind of laid back a little bit.
It was Barry White who was narrating.
Darren Korb, the composer for Supergiant Games, is so damn good at what he does.
Sort of like Alan Clausen.
Like, the music in Hades adapts to whether you're just, like, exploring or whether you're in the dead center of a fight. And it's just so good at like, moving with the tempo of what you do.
Yeah, apparently you can there's a bundle to buy all three soundtracks, the Hades, Bastion, and Pyre, if you want all those game soundtracks. That's pretty cool.
Pyre has a great soundtrack, too. Actually, like, Transistor is probably has some of my favorite songs, but Pyre has a great soundtrack, and, like, there's a couple songs in Hades that, like, I get goosebumps even after hearing them, like, 1,500 times.
I know that feeling. Some songs are just, like, classic.
Moving on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. All
right. Blizzard confirms BlizzCon 2021 dates from PC Games N. BlizzCon 2020 is canceled, but as Blizzard previously announced, the event will be taking place in an online format early next year. BlizzCon Online, or BlizzConline, as the company apparently plans to keep calling it, now has been confirmed for February 19th and 20th, 2021. The post doesn't provide details on how you'll be able to get into BlizzCon. You typically need to buy a ticket for full access to the online event. Whether there will be the usual digital goodies for your participation, or even how the typical announcements about new games and upcoming content will be handled. We still have a lot of planning to do, and it'll be some time before we're ready to share more ideas, Blizzard says. Some reveals that gamers are hoping to see for are things like Diablo 4 release date, which, fat chance, Overwatch 2 release date, which I am actually concerned that they haven't put that game out yet, and perhaps the next big World of Warcraft patch after the Shadowlands release date.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that BlizzCon is famous for when you go is that you come away with a lot of swag, and usually full games as well.
Yes. They almost always have just like a whole – they almost always have like a deluxe ticket that comes with exclusive skins and content for all of their games.
And always the next World of Warcraft expansion, they'll just give that away like nothing.
But I am like concerned about Overwatch 2. It kind of just fell off the face of the earth after getting announced last year. Like, I wonder what they're doing with that. I know they still update Overwatch because they still keep patching it.
I wonder if they have a new engine.
But, like, it's weird. I guess maybe they could be waiting for the next generation before they do Overwatch 2. That would be the only thing that makes sense to me at this point, because it has taken way too long for them to say anything else about that game.
Well, I mean, February is going to be smack dab in the launch months of the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X.
Sure, but they were talking about, like, I feel like they were talking about a mid-2020 launch date last year.
I think maybe they're using the pandemic as an excuse to put in more stuff.
That's possible. I would still also believe that they're just waiting for the next generation of consoles before they do it.
Yeah, but that's like in 2 months.
I know. Yeah, release date TBA. It was originally thought to be coming out in 2020.
Anyways, we'll see. I mean, I have never gone to BlizzCon, by the way.
I hear it's good from the people that from a few of my colleagues that have been out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody loves going to QuakeCon and BlizzCon, although when they announced the Diablo cell phone edition, that's the first time I ever saw anybody actively boo at a convention.
Yes.
That guy still work at Blizzard?
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
You guys have cell phones, right?
Oh, that's still a good joke these days.
Shadowlands has looked good. Like, there has been so much good lore coming out of that expansion that I actually care about for the first time in years. Sure. Yeah, because they're like, there's a lot of stuff from like the Frozen Throne that they kind of brought full circle, like about characters like Sylvanas, the Lich King.
Last time I ever cared about anything was Wrath of the Lich King.
That's what I'm saying, is that they've kind of brought the Wrath of the Lich King full circle, like. This next expansion, the big narrative is about Sylvanas, the Lich King, Uther Lightbringer, like a lot of those characters that played a big role in that and like were part of the original Warcraft trilogy are like coming full circle in this expansion.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will find out soon enough if the Microsoft pre-order launch is as tumultuous as – I can't imagine it's more tumultuous. But it'll be interesting to see if it sells out. Because here's the screwy thing about the PlayStation – 5 things selling out. There's still 3 more months until you actually have to release the things. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. They are definitely limiting what they have.
I don't know. But next week you will know. I will let everybody know if I actually manage to get a pre-order. By the way, I will not be doing All Access.
You won't?
Nah. For those who don't know, All Access is the pricing scheme for like a cell phone. You pay $32, $37 a month for the Xbox Series X.
$35 for the Series X and $25 for the Series S.
Yeah, and it comes with 24 months of Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm just going to spend the $500 in one big caboodle. Plump.
You could save money.
I'm not going to save money if I do a Game Pass. It's 2 years of spending $37.
No, yeah, but if, no, you, gonna, but if it's the whole package deal together.
Yeah. I know, I'm just going to spend just one big chunk. I don't want to have to deal with any more subscriptions.
Fair enough.
So anyways, we will see you next week and let you know what happens.
Scott. Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.